Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 292 of the Board Game Barbecue podcast, brought to you by Advent Games and our Patreons. My name is Lauren. I'll be sitting in the host chair tonight, and I'm joined here by two lovely hosts. I'm joined by Jules. Jules, how's it going?
I'm feeling great. I'm really excited for our chat today. Thank you.
Yes, I'm very, very keen for this chat, and I'm also joined by Dana. Dana, how's it going?
Good, thank you. I'm also excited. So it sounds like it's going to be a good pod. We're all in a good mood.
Yeah, so this is a slight departure from our normal format and order of operations. Today we're going to be taking a bit of a deep dive into a topic that's certainly near and dear to my heart, and I think is also important to you guys as well. And that is the kind of intersection between board gaming and mental health. So rather than go over what we've been playing, we're going to talk about that a bit more extensively and then go into some sizzles and our regular podcast shenanigans. I will kind of give a trigger warning at the outset. It may include themes relating to mental health and depression. So if that's not for you, then just be warned that's kind of where it's going. Take that as you will. Alrighty. So I've got a few things down, guys, but there are lots of things that kind of came to mind for me when talking about this topic. What were the kind of first things that crept into your heads when you thought board games and mental health?
Yeah, for me, we've covered this lightly in many podcasts in the past, and that is that board gaming is inherently a highly social hobby that, you know, some people may play a lot of solo games, but for the most part, you're engaging with a lot of people and engaging in a way that you don't often get to do in other activities as well. So it's, you know, competitive play and dealing with a different ranging emotions as you play different board games. So for me, the first thing that came to my mind with this intersection is that it's highly social and you're going to be interacting with a lot of people. And with that, you get exposure to a wide variety of people, different walks of life, different states of mind. And that's an interesting challenge and also a fun thing to engage with as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll kind of get into that a bit more, especially about the social aspect of the hobby and how that goes in terms of mental health. What about you, Dana? What were kind of the first things that came to mind when you heard this topic?
When it was suggested that we talk about it, I was so excited to be able to talk about it because for me, just from on a personal level, I've had mental health issues over the years, and it actually made me think about, I wonder where I would be if I didn't have board gaming. And that's how much it has affected my life. So I was so excited to talk about it and how it's helped me. And so that's how I feel about it.
I think one other thing that I'd like to say that came to mind is actually part of the reason this podcast exists. It started during COVID times, right? Initially, how it started was a Facebook post went out and a bunch of people said, you know, yeah, I'm interested in starting a podcast. And the reason I said yes to that post was that we were stuck indoors and I'm quite a social person. I like to be around other people and do activities. And I was starting to go a bit stir crazy without anything to do. So I said yes to doing this because it's like, oh, okay, this is something I can do at home and engage with and talk with other people and hopefully turn it into something productive with my time. So this, for me, this whole thing and saying yes to starting this podcast was I needed something to preoccupy myself and keep myself busy while having to stay indoors during lockdowns.
Yeah, there's a few really interesting things you've said there, Jules, that I want to touch on. So the first is feeling productive, right? Feeling like you're doing something, you've done something, you've accomplished something that day, which is certainly something that factors in for me in terms of playing board games. And the other thing is that social engagement, which is, you know, related to what you were saying earlier. And I guess, very prevalent during COVID was the issue of social isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something just unique to COVID. Increasing use of screen time and social media, increasing disengagement from one another. If you think about, or if you look at actually some of the research, and I promise I won't babble too much about research on this podcast, but in 1990, more than half of men reported having at least six close friends. And in 2021, that number had dropped down to just over a quarter.
And
10% of women and 15% of men report having no close friends. And about one in five people say that they only have one person outside their immediate household that they could go to for help and support. So it is an issue that is becoming more and more problematic, is this feeling of social isolation and detachment from other people. So I guess for you guys, how do you feel like board gaming addresses that or helps with that feeling of isolation?
I'm just curious, are those, do you think those statistics that you talk about, do you think that's because of social media, that people are tending to resort to their phones or, you know, devices, things like that, instead of interacting with people? Is that, you think, why it's decreasing?
Social media plays a huge part in that, but mental health disorders are generally becoming more prevalent and they are a risk factor for social isolation. So it's a really complex web to disentangle and a bit of a chicken and egg story. And there are certainly a lot of things that play into that. But absolutely, I feel like screen time is one of them. And that's one thing board gaming is, right? It's totally analog.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I think for me, as I said near the start of the podcast, that board gaming, I feel, is inherently a social hobby. And I think that's one of the great benefits that it really brings to the table, is that these games are designed to be sat down around a table with other people and playing them. And it has been interesting to see the rise of solo modes and solo gaming over the course of, you know, the pandemic, and it's even stuck around since then because so many people had no other choice but to be at home and be alone. But I think that it's the board gaming in general just provides so much social connection and removes that isolation that you said, Lauren, is on the rise if people really want to engage with it in the way it's designed to be. Now, in sort of on that topic, you know, I know people have talked about board games with apps and integrating technology into board games. And some people have a very strong stance with, I do not want screens or electronics at all in my board games. I refuse to play them because I want to get away from my screen. And I totally understand and respect that viewpoint. And I think it's going to be an interesting trend. I can only see that technology and board gaming are going to intersect a bit more. I don't think there'll ever be a time where it's all board games have some technology, but I think we'll see it more as technology improves and people find really intricate and innovative ways to entangle those two hobbies together. But for the most part, I think there's still a lot of people that are like, I want my hobby to be social and I'm trying to get away from my screen and have that face-to-face time with people rather than with the screen.
Oh, absolutely. I think I totally empathize with the position of wanting some separation, especially if you're a person who spends all day in their day job on screens and just how that can kind of interfere with your mental health. But it is, I guess you're right, a conversation that's going to crop up more and more, particularly with technological innovations and ways board games change. What did you think, Dana, just in terms of how board games affect that feeling of isolation? And I guess we can even talk about community here, right?
Well, I was in a bit of a different situation, I think, because I was feeling isolated, I guess, not because of, say, the pandemic or necessarily mental health issues at that particular time, but I was isolated as a stay-at-home mum, really. I had children that were growing up, becoming independent. And I had, I would describe that I had a personality that probably wasn't maybe your typical mother with mum with kids. So I didn't fit into the wine drinking and, you know, ladies that get dressed up and things like that. I didn't fit into that. They get together and have a glass of wine and blah, blah, blah. And that really isn't me. And I was feeling increasingly isolated because all of my social interactions had come from my children. I was sort of starved of social interaction. I've got a husband as well, God bless him, who works very long hours. And I also felt that over the course of, you know, 15 years or so of being a stay-at-home mum, my confidence sort of each year had gone down to almost nothing by the time 15 years came around. And so I found that I was actually isolating myself almost. I think if I didn't do something, I would have been a hermit. So it was actually when I think about it, it was such a blessing because I've always loved board games. It, in some ways, it was a blessing when my children stopped playing board games with me, because I was really forced to go elsewhere and find some other people to play with. And as I said, I look upon that time, and whilst I'm disappointed that they don't play games with me now, I'm so glad that that moment happened, because it forced me to get out of my comfort zone. And yeah, it's one of those things. It's quite sad, really, thinking about, you know, those 15 years where I sort of was pretty much at rock bottom by the time 15 years came around. But it's such a great story when I think about it. I think about what board gaming can do for someone and can do for their confidence and their social interactions. How lucky I am that I managed to find it. And as I said, I'm so glad to be talking about this so I can share that with other people if they're listening to this.
I really resonate with that, because I have a partner who does engage and play board games with me, but it's not his primary hobby. And so it kind of reached a tipping point where my appetite for board games had outpaced him. And he said, you need to find other people to play with. It in a really loving way, and kind of pushed me to go to events and go to meetups, which at first was really hard. And at first I said, I need you to come with me because I need some sort of crutch or social support, because it's just an overwhelming situation. And I don't consider myself necessarily a socially anxious person, so I can't even imagine how much more so that'd be difficult for someone who does suffer from something like social anxiety or does have other neurodiversity, things that would just make it harder to engage and enter that space with other people. But really having those other people to engage in a hobby with and share discussions with and message about board games, because it was something that was just kind of constantly on my mind. I was thinking about games to play, what had been released, all these kinds of things, right? And I just had people that could constantly engage with me in something that I was just so passionate about. It wasn't even always just about having people to play with, really.
I think as well for me, there's a bit of an age gap. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there's a bit of an age gap between you guys and me.
No.
Nah.
So honestly, to go onto social media and find people, you don't do that. I'm talking about at that time, you just didn't do that. Like, it was sort of, you know, even online, I don't begrudge online dating, of course, but it just seems so foreign to me. You have to meet people at a disco or doesn't that sound lame? They probably don't even have discos anymore. But
nope.
Yeah, but I mean that's how you meet people. So to even just do that, to actually message someone, or write comments in a random group with people that you don't even know, was such a big step to me. Mm. It was enormous.
100%. Meeting new people to game with is kind of like dating, right? There's that kind of first game you play with them and you've got jitters and you don't know what to say.
I know. I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, the first person that I met in board gaming, who we're still friends today, we just randomly, messaged each other, but it really just took a little bit of confidence just to say, I'm just going to ask her if she wants to meet somewhere. And we had decided, okay, we shouldn't meet at each other's houses because, she could be a stalker. So we had these visions. So let's meet at a coffee shop. And I remember I sort of was waiting for her and I didn't even know what she looked like. And she walked in and we sort of caught each other's eye, as you would do, like on a date. And we caught each other's eye and we sort of, when our eyes met, we knew.
Board gamers for life.
Yeah. Donna came holding a single rose.
BG BFFs.
And she said, are you? And she came up to me and before even sitting down, she sort of leaned in and whispered to me and she said, are you addicted to board games? And I said, yes. And she said, I've got them in my car. And immediately we had this connection that we could just laugh about. It was wonderful. It was wonderful to, it was actually wonderful to meet somebody like me. It was like I was a foreigner and I had no one, and to meet somebody like me was the best thing ever. It was great.
Yeah, it's that sense of belonging, right? Which I guess comes back to that point of community. You just kind of go somewhere and you go, yeah, these are my people.
Yes.
We've tried really hard from the beginning of the podcast to create a sense of community, whether that's online or at the game day events, trying to make people feel really welcome, setting them up with people that we know and will get along with anyone, picking the right game that makes them feel comfortable, that they'll enjoy. It's something we've just felt that's really, really important from the outset. It's a hobby that engages, it captures, I guess, so many people's attentions. And people come from all kinds of walks of life, as I said, and backgrounds. And it can be really challenging and hard to create a community when you have such diversity. But it honestly does work when, I guess, you have people that can be great leaders or representatives of the hobby that really show that this is a welcoming and an accessible hobby if you have the right people in place to welcome everyone. And I just feel so, so proud and overjoyed, feel of like what we've accomplished to help make people feel comfortable in the community. And look, maybe we've made mistakes along the way. We're not perfect at all, but I feel like we've done a pretty good job at creating that sense of community. And it can be really hard to make friends as an adult. I have had that challenge having moved around a lot. If you followed my journey from the start of the podcast, you'll know that I was living in Canberra, then I moved back to Melbourne, where I'm originally from, then moved to Sydney now, all within the space of 4 years. And board gaming has been the primary way I've been able to connect and meet other people. Luckily, I don't have social anxiety. I feel okay going to a social meetup myself and just saying, hi, can I play this game with you? But if I didn't have this hobby, I would have had to go through other avenues that I feel like are a little more challenging, like jumping into a team sport straight away. The hobby of board gaming just has a bit more of a lower barrier to that entry. You have this engaging experience for 30 minutes to an hour, and then you could walk away and never see that person again, and it's totally fine. But yeah, it's community is so important, and I feel like board games are a great way to help people feel connected and make new friends.
Well, I love it that I can be with a stranger and play a board game, and I don't even necessarily have to be across the table with someone, looking at them in the eye, driving some sort of important conversation. And I've got this board game that we can almost communicate through the board game.
It's
a way to communicate with someone without having the pressure of actually having to speak. Because I've got a bit of a thing. I don't like feeling stupid. I feel that sort of thing makes me to the point where I don't want to talk, sort of thing. So I find that just being able to communicate through a board game, and even if it's a cooperative game or something like that, I can just put my two cents worth in and I feel like I've communicated, I've achieved something, I've connected with someone. That's the word I'm looking for. I've connected with someone, and we can sit there and talk about other games that we like, or we can connect by feeling the pieces of the board game, and you can see someone's reaction when they're touching the pieces of the board game. That sounds really deep, doesn't it? But it's not meaning to be deep. It's not meaning to be like that, but that sounds like, yeah, anyway.
That's what it is, right? The board games function as this really great, almost social lubricant for people that have a hard time interacting with others. There's a really structured way to sit around and engage with other people. And I sometimes feel like that's the reason why there is so much neurodiversity in this hobby, why you do have people, various kind of developmental conditions that might make it difficult to interact with people, or that there are barriers to interact, or other disabilities, because it really does give you a safe and reliable format to engage with other people. And if you don't feel comfortable being social, you can also engage in more parallel play, right? I'm sitting here, you're sitting there, and we're both playing Hadrian's Wall, but this is the level of social engagement that that person may feel comfortable with. And they can do that. And that's awesome.
Then there's so many games on every different level that you can connect with someone, from heavy interaction, you know, negotiating with people, this multiplayer solitaire, solo board gaming, and everything in between.
Throw burrito, where you get to throw something at someone.
Yes. But it's the perfect hobby for that. And the other thing that I find is, and I think we've mentioned it already, but that people are very accepting of anybody, really, any persuasion, anything. And I think it's because a lot of people in the hobby know maybe what it's like not to belong, or not to know, not to have found their people. And so they seem to have a certain empathy for that. And well, that's what I find anyway. Yeah.
I feel like there's something also to be said just about the fact that it's play. And as adults, how often do you get to play and be silly, or role play, or just have fun and escape from adult stresses? I feel like even when I think about things like hustle culture, I feel like there's so much emphasis on adults to be competent, to be work-driven and motivated and oriented. And there's not as much conversation around adults kind of just having fun. It's almost like if you have downtime, it has to be productive. You have to be working to something, or having a side hustle, or engaging in fitness. And those are all great, but why can't you just play as an adult?
Yeah. It's a great conversation piece, that thing. Play as an adult, I feel, is not... I feel like it's starting to become more widely accepted, but certainly wasn't maybe 10 years ago. That hustle culture you mentioned, we see it so much on social media, right? But I'm sure people know and have heard this time and time again that social media, what's portrayed there is certainly not reality. And I know several individuals that have been a part of that hustle culture and have burnt out and crashed, and in quite a deep and harmful way. And it's because they didn't allow themselves to engage with things that were fun. And that doesn't mean it needs to be board games. It could be team sports. It could be watching movies or whatever it is. It's sad to me that oftentimes the activities that are deemed as play, like board games, for example, tend to be maybe not demonized, but looked down upon as unproductive and therefore not important. And I think that's absolutely the wrong way of looking at all of it. Fun and play is so important for our mental health, but also I feel like it has really translatable social skills and helps you in all aspects of your life.
I still experience that with my family. When I tell them, like if I've been to a game day or I've played games for the day, they can't understand how I can play games all day. And it's almost like if I were going hiking, they wouldn't say anything. It would just be, oh, that's lovely, you know, that's great. But board gaming, it's like you actually play games for the day. It's almost, I agree with you, it's looked down upon as a hobby in some ways. Why would you do that for all that time? But for me, it's exercising me mentally.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it would be like reading a book for the day, or, you know, for some people, or doing other things. People seem to think that it's not worthy as a hobby. Mm.
Completely agree, just in terms of it not being valued as much. One of my other hobbies is indoor climbing, and I always seem to, I feel like, get a lot more respect for that hobby as opposed to this hobby.
Well, interesting.
Not respect, maybe just kind of, I get a bit of a side eye when I talk about the board gaming.
Yeah.
But the response to indoor climbing is, oh, wow, that's amazing. You must be so strong. No, but stuff like that, right? So it's, yeah, I just think I wish that people would give themselves the freedom to engage in kind of carefree play.
Mm.
It does get easier as you get older, because you sort of go, I just don't care anymore what other people think. It gets so much easier as you get older. And you can just
them.
Yeah, say, bugger you.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is maybe kind of the flip side of what we've been speaking about up until now, but I think something that I also do see, I see people post about it on BoardGameGeek, sometimes on Facebook, which is kind of how mental health can impact your engagement in board gaming. There was a recent conversation on the Board Game Barrage podcast where they talked about how they changed in the hobby. And one of the hosts, I can't remember which one, said that he derived less joy out of buying new games than he used to when he first got in the hobby, which is certainly something you see, right?
There's an evolution of the gamer.
There's an evolution, but there is kind of, in some ways, diminishing returns and excitement over things in the hobby. I feel like things that made me really excited when I first got into board gaming have to work double time now to excite me, getting a new game, playing a new game. And I don't think that's a symptom of necessarily any mental health related issues. It's more just kind of a symptom of being in the hobby for a long time. But you can also experience those kinds of things in, say, depression, for example. One of the hallmarks of depression is anhedonia, which is diminished ability to derive pleasure or enjoyment from things that were otherwise previously enjoyable, and as well, low motivation. So I think that's certainly something I think people can relate to, is when you're stressed or when you're feeling down, it's harder to motivate yourself to engage in the hobby, and it's harder to kind of enjoy it or have it spark as much joy as it previously would, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you think that's probably a reason to, if you were in the hobby, that you might fall back to, say, board game arena or something like that, where you don't necessarily have to input anything. You don't have to get out of your pajamas, but you can still have some sort of, like, you can still activate your mind in some way until you become well. And that's, you know, the beauty of board gaming as well in with solo gaming, you know, things like that, which you wouldn't have been able to do maybe. I don't know. When did solo gaming start, or solo modes?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. When I'm stressed, I am not about to set up Mage Knight for a solo game. I will default to Hadrian's Wall or Board Game Arena. So I guess you're right.
Yeah.
In that having those lower barriers to entry does help when you're mood is maybe not there or your motivation's not there. But the solo gaming community is an interesting conversation, because so much of what we've been talking about is, right, engaging socially and sitting with other people and those interactions, but in senses of community. And not to say that there's not a thriving solo community, there certainly is, but I wonder what you guys think about the intersection between mental health and specifically solo gaming.
Yeah, for me, solo gaming feels quite different. To me, it feels like engaging with a Sudoku or a crossword. It's a puzzle that I can engage with to exercise my mind. But the cool thing about board games in particular are I can engage with a game of Mage Knight or Cloud Spire or Hadrian's Wall, or even something simple like Doom Machine, which is a bunch of dice chucking. I then have experienced something, and hopefully I'm part of a group of friends or a community where then I can go and share that experience with other people and engage in that way, rather than, you know, another board game that's multiplayer and you'll have that engagement right then and there. To me, it's a way of being mindful, sitting down, slowing down, engaging with a puzzle and taking things at my pace. That's the thing I think that solo gaming really does offer, is you can go at your pace and enjoy it how you want to enjoy it. And I know Mitch has talked about this before, even with setting up some of the GMT games, and he's going to play it solo, and he doesn't even really get far into the game before he's looking up events in history that are referenced on cards and just enjoying reading about the history that way. You know, solo gaming, I think, as I just said, is about enjoying the hobby at your pace. It's more slowing down, but then you can share that experience and your thoughts and feelings with it after the fact.
Yeah, I completely agree. So there's kind of twofold for you, Jules. On the one hand, it's being able to enjoy this puzzle, engage in some self-care, perhaps even mindfulness, and really sit with the game and not have the external pressures of feeling like you need to calculate at a rapid pace because someone's waiting on your turn.
Yes.
So it alleviates some of those things. And maybe allows you to enjoy the game in a different way. Beyond that is that, yeah, you're right, you can then go talk about those games and engage with other people. So it kind of still has that sense of community. And I know there's really thriving online solo communities talking about homebrew solo versions for games that don't have solo modes. There's lots of kind of active solo players. And I really agree and I think resonate with the part of being able to do things at your own pace. It almost feels like there's a different aspect to gaming that I'm able to enjoy when I play it solo. That was when I played Horseless Carriage was the thought I had.
Okay, yeah.
I wish I could play this solo because there's so much to puzzle and calculate and pass, but I couldn't sit there and do it because there were other people waiting on me to have a turn, and that kind of social pressure detracted from my enjoyment of that game. But it was something that uniquely I feel like if I had on an iPad that I could enjoy solo and really sitting with, and that would be a really nice way to engage in kind of some solitaire contemplative play.
When I'm sort of lacking in motivation, and I do go through those periods, I've also found other board game adjacent things that do help me that don't require so much overhead. And when I say overhead, because when I'm feeling unmotivated, setting up a board game is an effort. Getting it off the shelf is an effort sometimes. I find that just these little adjacent things such as 3D printing or something like that where I can just happen to have a 3D printer. I'm lucky to have one. But I can just sit there and watch it and I can and I feel like I'm doing something. I feel like I'm achieving something.
What about sleeving cards?
Sleeving cards. Oh my goodness. Sleeving cards.
Punching components,
things like that, or just reorganize something. I'll just do that. I just love just doing something in still within the hobby until I feel settled or comfortable enough to venture past that again is helpful. But I've always found that there's always something in board gaming that you can do, which is a positive thing.
That's the essence of kind of mindfulness, right? It's engaging in things that put you in the present moment, take you away from thoughts necessarily, allow thoughts to wash over you, and really just focusing on tactility, physical sensations, what you hear, what you feel and smell, Dana.
Yes.
I'm sure for you, Jules, that sounds like it would be mini painting.
Oh, yes, of course, painting.
Yeah, absolutely. Mini painting's a big one.
I love all those adjacent things. I totally agree.
Lauren, I'm interested in your thoughts that do you think that there are negative aspects of the board gaming hobby for mental health?
That's a very good question. I think yes is my answer. I think with any hobby it can be engaged in excess. I think there are components of the hobby that are quite addictive. And I don't think I've met someone in the hobby yet that would qualify for, say, having a hoarding disorder. That's really on another level. But there are definitely ways in which people can kind of almost substitute proper care and proper attention to their health with kind of dopamine hits. And dopamine's become a bit of a kind of a hot term. But
yeah, it's retail therapy, right? Some people, yeah. I'm feeling down, I'll buy a board game. And they're searching for that lift.
And the buying of the board games can sometimes even become a substitute for engaging in the hobby in any capacity. Right? People think, well, I can't play them and I can't do this. I'll just buy them instead. And that doesn't have the same levels of fulfillment. And that's why it's only really short-lived. That's why retail therapy doesn't work right. It's because the dopaminergic hit from an acquisition is really, really small and is really, really short-lived.
And then, of course, you've got the impending guilt afterwards because, you know, we're not playing the game that we bought.
Oh, totally. And I think there's something to be said as well about the ways in which the hobby or the culture around the hobby kind of exerts pressures on people.
Yes.
To either try new games, have the next thing, and perhaps even kind of feelings of inadequacy, of I am not as much of a board gamer because I've not played this new game, or I only play my 20 games over and over. And I think that kind of gatekeeping exists in most hobbies. I know certainly it exists in climbing, certainly it exists in video games. But that kind of you're lesser than because you can't, you know, get on my level kind of thing, right? Look at all these amazing games I have. Look at all these things that I've tried. And that kind of keeping up with the Joneses to some extent exists in community talk as well, right?
Yeah. It's all about the hype. Oh, this new such and such game. It's the greatest game ever. Everyone has to play it. And you sit there and go, well, I don't have the funds and I don't know anyone that has that game. I'm missing out. You know, that sort of mentality can be really dangerous, I feel.
And you also have sometimes, sometimes I see online you have people that can sometimes yuck somebody's yum. you use that term.
Some people take board games very personally.
they have a very personal attachment to certain things. And if someone doesn't like it, why don't you like it? How can you not like it?
Mm.
And I guess the other thing I would say, Dana, about negative impacts would be people having negative experiences in social interactions around games.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are people, I mean, I've mostly spoken to women about this, but it's certainly not something that's unique to women, going to a meetup and having a bad experience with someone who is rude, whether that be intentionally or unintentionally, having someone who's just outright mean or condescending. And that can really impact people. It can make them feel self-conscious, anxious, and want to disengage with the hobby. So I think those things are prevalent. I don't think they represent the overwhelming part of the hobby, but those experiences certainly do exist.
That's very true. I had an experience myself, the first board game group that I went to. And I remember I was very new to the hobby. And I had just acquired and learnt to play Wingspan, and I was very pleased with myself at the time. And I turned up to this board game group, and a guy said to me, what games are you playing? What games have you been playing? And I said, I just learnt Wingspan. And I was, as I said, I was quite happy with myself. And he looked at me and he just said, why don't you play a real game? And I went, and I just felt like, honestly, my mood just went straight down. And that has stayed with me, actually. And since then, I always try, if someone says they might like to come to LXG, for example, which is a board game group in Brisbane, I always say, if you want to come, I'll meet you there right at the start, and I'll get you set up with a game, or we'll play a game. Or something like that, because I never want to hear someone having an experience like that, because it completely turns people off the hobby. And I'm not really sure I understand why people would be like that, because we all just want other people to play with. Yeah. We just want someone to play with.
That sort of experience is not unique to board gaming, though. There are people that are car enthusiasts, and you might rock up with this old beat around, like, why don't you go buy a real car? Like, that's it's funny how that's gatekeeping, right? That exists in all forms of hobbies that we as people engage with. But it is sad that gatekeeping exists. I wish it didn't. I really wish it didn't. But it's sort of people that it's up to other people to call that out, I feel like, when it does happen.
I think it's important, in particular in our hobby, because I think we are so diverse, and there are a lot of people that do have perhaps social anxiety or things like that, that it's even more important to be welcoming. This is sort of like a, I don't know whether it's board gaming can almost be like therapy, and it's so important for that first meeting to be welcoming and meaningful and kind
and safe.
Yeah
totally. As someone who plays board games in therapy sessions with clients, totally, board games can be therapeutic. 100%. I should mention I'm a psychologist, if that wasn't clear from the context of this podcast. But yeah, I think they can be immensely therapeutic. And on the note of gatekeeping, Jules, I think it exists, right, when someone's ego is too tied up into their hobby, and their kind of sense of self and identity and self-worth is how much they're able to engage in this and how much they know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same kind of people, right, that are sore losers or will want to control everyone's moves in co-op games. I feel like it's all part and parcel of the same kind of person, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, any hobby could do without. There's pricks everywhere. People suck.
Yeah.
No. One more thing I wanted to talk about was how the topic of mental health is represented in board games, because it's not something that occurs too often. But there are a few games that came to mind that kind of deal with topics of mental health. This War of Mine is one of them. And perhaps war games more generally can delve into that just because the theme is quite somber. The Grizzled was another one.
Yes, The Grizzled, yes.
Or say maybe The Pursuit of Happiness more loosely. Yes. I was wondering kind of what you guys thought, if you could think of any other games or if you think that it's a topic we need more in board gaming.
So off the top of my head, I haven't played this one, but I think it's called An Unconscious Mind.
Yes, yes.
That I don't know if that's been delivered yet.
No, it hasn't. We're still waiting for it.
I have played it. I've played it on TTS, and it's very abstract, but it does kind of deal with Freudian on it. Psychotherapy and analysis of dreams. So it's, certainly kind of baked into the game.
Yeah, and the other one would be Cerebria, where you're playing as emotions. Again, very abstracted, but touches on topics of mental health.
Do you think that board game designers may steer clear of that topic because, I don't know, I'm trying to think. I wonder if people think, this is part of my life, I don't want to play a board game about it. I wonder if designers think that.
I don't. Look, there may be designers that are steering clear for those reasons, but I don't think so. I think translating cognitive experience into a board game can be really, really challenging to do. Now, I think the way the games that Lauren's mentioned, like this War of Mine, that touch on subjects and engage with people on a very emotional level is a much more... I think it's an easier way to design a game around touching on particular topics, but I feel like the adjacent sort of hobby to board gaming being role-playing games is a lot easier to explore and discuss those topics of mental health and depression and things in that realm. I think, we've mentioned a couple of board games that touch on aspects of, challenging emotions and mental health, but I don't think there's a great swath of board games out there that do that. And I think the reason for that is it can be quite challenging to translate such complex human experience into a board game with defined rules, when in reality, we as people, we have social rules that we abide by, but we're all our own individual selves. And in reality, we're all kind of messy in our own minds, and to confine that into a rules experience can be quite challenging. Whereas, as I said, that RPG experience is a lot more loose and fluid, and the topic of conversation can be a lot broader.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's, I think, a design challenge, which is probably why it's so much more prevalent in tabletop RPGs, because it's really easy to incorporate those topics in a journaling game, for example. If people want a good solo tabletop RPG that does explore themes around depression and mental health, Below is a really excellent one that I would highly recommend. But it's really difficult. We're really complex. And so one thing I wish, I guess, games would at least attempt to is kind of take aspects of that. I think Fog of Love is a good example of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, and that's obviously a very innovative game, but kind of how aspects of life or aspects of living or our experiences intersect with mental health. And I think that that's something that still could be explored a lot more in board games for sure.
I wanted to ask you, Lauren, with your experience as a psychologist, when you feel it's appropriate to bring a board game into a therapy session, what are you hoping for that tool to help? I mean, obviously there's various people with various experiences and various challenges, but is there a very clear objective you hope that board games have in helping your patients?
That's a really good question. So I work now in the pediatric space. I used to work, after I finished my clinical master's, I worked in geriatrics, and so didn't really have the opportunity as much to incorporate board games. But after my PhD, after I moved into pediatric space, I had a lot of different uses for it. The first one is just to build rapport.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important predictors of success in therapy is client-therapist rapport. And so just for a child to trust me, I feel like board games do so much heavy lifting there.
Mm.
And they can be quite disarming. But on top of that, and there's members in the community who I've spoken to about this, if a child has more kind of complex developmental needs, then using the framework of a board game is a really easy way to communicate with them.
Mm.
I see a few kids with autism, and playing games like Onitama for a child whose special interest is chess is the perfect way to engage with him.
Mm.
On top of that, there is a lot of utility to board games in terms of teaching social skills. Some of the kids I work with, I'm teaching turn-taking. I'm teaching emotional regulation skills, their ability to lose and cooperate. And board games do an outstanding job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is also just as a reward. Often kids will come in and therapy is really hard.
Yeah.
You've got to do the work. Sometimes you'll come out of therapy feeling worse than when you came in. And that doesn't mean it's not working. It specifically means it is working. It's just that the thing that you have to do is exhausting or hard or confronting. And so board games at the end of sessions are kind of a nice reward for that work a child has done, and also a bit of an escape from what is otherwise pretty challenging for a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid to work through.
Mm. Oh, that's really interesting.
I really like the way you talk about that with children, because as a parent with children, my children are older now, I wish that I had really made board games part of my children's upbringing more. I didn't do that, and I regret that, because I'm just listening to all these benefits, not just in therapy but just in life for children, and how it can help them as young adults and into adulthood. And it's really wonderful just hearing all those benefits, even for parents that listen to the podcast. It's fantastic.
Well, thanks so much for that chat, guys, and for indulging me in a topic that I find really interesting. I hope our community finds it really interesting as well. And I'm sure lots of people will have a lot to say about the various topics that we've covered.
Yeah, there's so much more to explore there. But yeah, it's a topic I think is worthy of discussion on a somewhat frequent basis, because, as we said many times, we're a very diverse community. And there are people absolutely listening to this, I'm sure, that are struggling with mental health at the moment. And there are people that are listening that will struggle in the future. So it's important for us for all to be understanding, welcoming, and be kind to each other.
Absolutely. And I will say as well, if you are struggling with your mental health, if you're feeling anxious or isolated or low, and you're part of a community, please reach out to the people in that community. The Board Game Barbecue community is incredibly supportive and accepting, and we really hope that we can create a safe space for people to engage with other people, be honest with other people. It is perhaps a more male-dominated hobby, and that's an issue that's really, really prevalent for men in particular, is not being able to be open and vulnerable when, you know, you're feeling down. So I really hope that if you are struggling, please, you know, join our community, reach out to those around you, to your local gaming groups. There's lots of people around you who care and will support you. All right. Thank you for that chat, guys. That was awesome. Now we're going to get into some sizzling games. So Jules, do you want to lead us off on the game that you wanted to talk about?
Absolutely. So this one I've already mentioned in a recent episode, and the comment I made last time was, I'm not really sure if I like it or not, but I'm sizzling it today. It means I like it, and I do want to buy a copy eventually, and that is Kanar or Nar. I still don't know which is the correct pronunciation for that one, but I'm just going to go with Nar for this and see if anyone corrects me in the comments. That's totally cool. So Nar is a really easy to learn and pick up game, in that you're building a tableau of different Vikings, and you'll use those Vikings to essentially try and race to 40 victory points. That is the end game trigger. And you'll use those Vikings to get resources that allow you to purchase ships, that allow you to spend currency to get more reputation, which provide passive points every single time you have your turn, and also to buy from a secondary deck of ships that have flat, straight, big chunks of points. So there's a few different strategies within the game as to how you get your points. Sometimes you're going really hard for that reputation and getting that passive point build up, or sometimes you're just trying to go for those big chunks of points and or even just using the Viking cards that give you straight points when you stack them. The really interesting twist in this game is when you play a particular color Viking card in front of you, you get the symbol that's on it, whether it's a victory point or reputation or a helmet, which helps you to buy ships or also recruit different cards. You also trigger every other color of that Viking you've already played. So you get this, not cascading, but you get this cumulative benefit the more of the same color that you collect. But the really interesting thing is if you choose to take a turn where you're playing a Viking card, you need to recruit a Viking card. And the way that the market is laid out is there is a slot for each of the five different colored Vikings. So if I play a red Viking card, I have to take the Viking that is in that red slot, but that might be a blue one. And I might not have any blues to play at the moment. And I might not want that color, and I can spend the helmets that I've collected through playing other cards to instead grab one that's not of the slot of the colored Viking that I played. But if I'm spending those helmets to do that, then that's helmets that I don't have to spend on Viking ships that may help towards getting me victory points. So there's this interesting push and pull between how you're spending your resources, what colors you're collecting, watching what colors your opponents are collecting, maybe not letting them collect colors of a certain type, so they get that compounding benefit of playing the same color over and over again. And one of the things I had to grapple with that made me unsure if I liked the game was it's so quick. It's over so quickly. And I thought, I felt like everything was just kind of getting going. But the more I've played the game, the more I've realized I think it's one of those games that I would sit down with people and go, all right, best of three. That's the sort of environment I'd like to play that game. And there's actually a really interesting puzzle the more I play it of I'm not just collecting as many Vikings as I can throughout the game and then spending them all to get the ships and hopefully I'm getting to that 40 victory points. But there's a roller coaster or an ebb and flow of resources and there's fluctuating moments in the game of even though it's so tight of you build up to have a lot of Vikings in front of you and you might spend a few to get this ship and then you use one more Viking to trigger that to give you more victory points and then all of a sudden a new card, the Viking card has flopped out and you actually might spend a bunch of your Vikings instead of the helmets to buy that ship. And there's this really interesting pattern that can emerge and it's about being very reactive and trying to pick the right moment to pivot and go, all right, now I'm burning everything to try and reach that finish line faster than my opponent. And I found that puzzle really, really satisfying. I am very excited that it is coming to Australia. For a while, we weren't really sure if it was, but it is. Pandasaurus got the rights to sell in the Australian market. So you might find it on pre-order at a bunch of different gaming stores, and it's a small box, it's easy to teach, accessible, and I've just been absolutely addicted to it on BGA, where I've racked up over 30 plays. So that is
Wow, that's awesome. This is certainly a game that's been getting a lot of love from various content creators. Mm-hmm. I know Amy and Maggie talked quite highly of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those games that is just, as I said, the rule teach is just like 2-3 minutes and the game's done in 15-20 minutes, absolute tops. And it feels like a very satisfying puzzle and it's just like, all right, let's go again and again and again.
Sounds like my kind of game.
Yeah, I think you'd like it, Dana. I really do. Yeah.
Do the components lend themselves well in the physical form to, okay, let's just reset and play again?
Yeah, because the setup is just throw all the cards together, shuffle and deal. You will have to take out some cards depending on player count, but if you're at max player count, you just throw the whole deck together, shuffle and go again. You've only got a really simple board in front of you, and it's kind of cool. It has like almost cutouts for the circle tokens that you're collecting for your shields and your currency or artifacts or whatever they call it. It's just a really tight, neat little production. Very easy to just hit that reset button and go again.
Awesome. Definitely one I need to give a try. It sounds great.
Yeah, very, very good.
All right, Dana, what have you been playing that you'd like to sizzle?
Guess where we're going?
Oh, tell us.
Madagascar.
Japan. We're going to Japan. You're going to love, I think you're going to really like this, Lauren. I really do. So I mentioned this, like you, Jules, I mentioned this in a previous podcast, and I really felt like I think I'm going to have to sizzle it. But it's Let's Go to Japan. So it's published by AEG, and the designer is Josh Wood, who I had not heard of, but when I researched it on BGG, he's designed Cat Lady.
Oh, okay.
And Santa Monica.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So this was a Kickstarter that just recently delivered, and when I say that, probably maybe 6 weeks ago, something like that. And as soon as I saw the deliveries come in, I thought I really should have backed that game. You're a traveler and you're planning your holiday to Japan. So this is why you're going to like this, Lauren. It's all about travel. Ooh. And you're going to plan your holiday and then you're going to experience your dream vacation to Japan. So it's a card drafting game, but I haven't heard it described this way, but I think it's sort of like a programming game as well. So as I said, you're trying to plan out your trip by playing cards that represent various tourist attractions. So you've got your holiday, which goes for a week, and each turn players are going to draw cards. And you're going to play different tourist attractions to various days of the week. And any the cards that you don't use, the leftovers are going to pass to a neighbouring player. And you're going to be trying to line up symbols with specific days of the week. So, for example, if Tuesday has been nominated as a day where you'd like to visit temples and shrines, you're going to want to place activities on that day that relate to that. And each day you can nominate a highlight of the day. And if you meet the prerequisites on your highlight of the day, it can give you certain bonuses. For example, it might elevate your mood, or you might be able to get a luxury train ticket. And so when all your days are full, players then go from left to right, Monday to Saturday, and you actually go through and experience your holiday. So when I played this yesterday, our group of ladies, we all actually sat there and went through our days and talked about the things that we did. For example, we went to the Kabuki Theatre, and what's really lovely about this game is that each of the tourist attractions have a little blurb on the card, and they're beautifully, beautifully illustrated. And they've got a little blurb on the card, and it even tells you how to pronounce it. Some of the words are really difficult to pronounce, and it tells you little things, little facts about what that particular tourist attraction is. And it's really important, and this is why I say it's a programming game. You're going to have to go through your itinerary from Monday to Saturday, so left to right. So you've got to be thinking about, okay, if I've placed this particular tourist attraction on Thursday and I need to get 3 shrine tags, then I need to make sure that I put those in Monday to Wednesday or whatever. So it's sort of like a programming game. But anyway, that's how I see it. And there's even like a little mood meter that you're gauging whether your attractions are satisfying or enjoyable or exciting, or whether they cost too much, they're too expensive. And this game just makes me happy. It honestly makes me happy. And I thought it was, I picked it particularly for today because I thought it was such a good game for mental health. And one reason is, first of all, it's simultaneous play, which I love. If you have maybe a short attention span or something like that, I think it's excellent. I feel like I'm a broken record because I keep talking about simultaneous play, but I love simultaneous turns. The tactile nature of these components, oh my goodness, they're like so chunky. It's just beautiful. It's, oh my goodness. And it came wrapped in cloth, the game. It was this beautiful Japanese cloth. I don't know what it was called, but it was beautiful Japanese cloth. And there's so many interesting facts in the rule book and on the cards, like the little round tracker it's a thing called a Daruma doll. I don't know if you've ever heard of one of those before, but these are traditional dolls. And what you do, you set yourself a task and you colour in the left eye of this doll. And then when you've completed the task, you fill in the right eye of this doll. It's used as a way of tracking, you know, goals that you've been completed.
Oh,
now,
right.
I'm sure this doesn't include like taking out the rubbish or something like that. it would be something significant, I would imagine. But it was such a beautiful game and such a wonderful experience. And I probably interrupted the whole explanation there. But in the end, the winner is the person with the most points. But I loved the fact that we actually got taken on a journey in this game, because at the back of the rule book, it talks about how this game was created. And it says that in 2020, Josh, the designer, and his girlfriend were planning a holiday to Japan, and then the pandemic came along.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And so they had to cancel their plans. And so he took that time during COVID to create this game, Let's Go to Japan, and he used his travel notes to do it. And I thought, what a wonderful way of making something out of a disappointing situation.
Yeah, that's really cool. I was like, I've put all this work and effort into planning the ultimate Japan trip, and now it's going to be delayed for whoever knows how long. Well, I'm just going to put it all on a board game now. That's pretty cool.
Yes. And I thought, this could be, oh, that's the other thing. Like, you've got to be really careful with your planning, because it's all about attractions in Kyoto and Tokyo. So if you've got attractions in Kyoto and then next you're going to Tokyo, you've got to catch a train and that loses points. So you've got to be really careful about planning your day. You can't have different attractions in different cities and things like that. So it does feel like travel planning. And I reckon that this game could have like a travel adventure series. You could have New York and Washington, D.C. or something like that. Or you could have, like, there's fast trains in Paris, for example, like Paris and Lyon or something like that. But I love that I went on a journey that he was planning, the designer that he was planning, and I thought it was wonderful. And I highly recommend it.
Yeah. As you were talking, Dana, I was just looking through photos on BGG. It is a beautiful production, really nicely illustrated. I don't know if you went so far as to get, I think it was separate, like the bowls that hold all the components.
That you could, if you went in all in, you'd get the little bowls.
And they're
bowls.
Actually ceramic bowls.
Yes. They're like proper bowls.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. No, yeah, it looks very beautiful. Very, very
And it
beautiful.
Makes me want to go to Japan.
Ah, well, it's achieved its goal then.
That's it. Like one of the little attractions is going to the game market, Tokyo Game Market.
Hey, cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah, this one looks amazing. The production is so beautiful. And I feel like it for me is kind of what I wanted Steam Up to be.
Yeah.
Right? Really beautiful components, simple gameplay, gentle set collection. Yeah, this one looks really, really good. It was brought to Gamerpalooza in Brisbane, but I didn't get the chance to play it. But yeah, just really want to give this one a try.
I will say that it is multiplayer solitaire. Like it is like, but I like that. That's something that I like in a game. Yeah. So
I think I'm out. I want to go in there, someone on the wrong train and go in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's right. I like it. Yeah.
Unless you can't send someone off to the other side of Japan, feels you're not interested.
That's it.
Wrong train. It just navigating all the different kind of... And if anyone's actually been to Japan and trying to navigate the trains there, which are run by like a million different private rail companies,
yeah, it's a difficult disaster.
It would lend itself well to a take that game. That experience.
Oh, dear.
All right. So thanks for those sizzles, guys. Definitely two games that I do want to give a try. And with that, we'll move on to the question of the pod.
You know that game you've been wanting for a long, long time? The one that's been on your wish list for ages? Yeah, that one. The one you've been adding to your cart and taking off again, umming and ahhing about whether you should get it or not? Well, I'm here to push you over the edge and say go to adventgames.com and add that to your cart right now. I bet you that Dean has a great price on it. He's got great customer service, flat rate shipping, and there's so many other goodies to explore on the website. Wonderful categories all organized to pick the exact game that's right for you and the group that you play with. So head over now, don't hesitate, to adventgames.com.au and add that game to your cart now.
Alrighty, so now on to question of the pod. So the last week's question was, who would you like to see win the Golden Geek Award and why? Jules, do you want to read out some of the responses from Facebook?
Sure. So we had Felicity Grace said, I was very impressed by Art Society and would really like to see it win. The combination of beautiful artwork and mechanisms, Polyomino and Auction, was so satisfying visually as well as a puzzle. We found it felt a bit like Fit to Print with less chaotic energy, which suits our group better. My vote for innovative definitely goes to Earthborn Rangers. Their commitment to environmentally sustainable production is impressive by itself, but even more so that they have shared their process with full transparency so other publishers can benefit and follow suit.
Dana, would you like to read some of the Discord responses?
Sure. Shawatan says, I hope Hegemony sweeps.
Enough said.
Yeah. Megs Ruth says, I think either Dracula versus Van Helsing or Sky Team for two player, being that these games are some of the most talked about. But I love the art of Van Helsing and I love the gameplay and the variability of Sky Team. But as much as I said I love Sky Team for play, I think in the co-op category, the art project is amazing because you really have to talk it out and be cooperative. I would also love to see That's Not a Hat win Best Party Game because I haven't laughed during a party game like that in a while. Vote for favorite podcast is already locked down. Needs no explanation. I don't know what she's talking about, but... And Def, I would like to see games that are not so popular win awards. There are some awesome designs that don't make it into the spotlight much as they get shadowed by the most popular games. This includes games I love myself, by the way. For instance, I adore Voidfall and I think it's one of the best designs in the past few years. But a lot of people already know and talk about it. I would love to see a game that is less known, like Hegemony, get more attention, especially as it gives a glimpse on how the world works and tries and teaches people around social economics and other parts of our society.
So now on to our new question of the pod. It's going to be, unsurprisingly, related to our conversation around mental health. And that is, how do you feel the board gaming hobby or board gaming affects your mental health?
For me, I've probably touched on this in our conversation, but the two big things that spring to mind is it helps me exercise my mind. I find when I'm not using my mind so much, I start to get, bored or disinterested about life. I really like to engage my mind on a frequent basis and really stretch it. And the other is just being social with people. Board games are just a really low barrier to entry, easy medium for me to engage with other people and to have a laugh, to have cracks at each other and enjoy some good banter. I love some good banter. And it's just such an easy go-to for me to engage with other people and be social. And both of those things reap huge benefits, I feel, for mental health, in particular mine.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think for me, it's feeling productive and also feeling like I have some balance in my life. Getting to the end of a day and feeling like all I've done is work can feel really hard, especially sometimes I'll leave work even in the summer and it's already dark outside, and just feeling like I have something else in my day that's not that, that's a total break from that. My job can be exhausting at times. It can be a bit depleting. And so having something that is really restorative and really fills my cup back up, I think just gives me energy to kind of continue to give to other people and be empathic to other people. But I really need something that feels selfishly just me time. And I think maybe that's why I sometimes really love solo gaming. What about you, Dana? You've kind of alluded to how you feel that mental health and board gaming intersect for you.
Yes, I've probably already divulged my entire life, but I would say that I think board gaming is honestly like therapy for me. And I'm not saying that, of course, your profession is going to go out of business because of board games. But it's like therapy for me. I can sit around the table and play a board game. And I'm specifically talking now about a game group and ladies that I met through the board game barbecue community. And we can sit there and play a game and we can talk about the game, but we also talk about our lives and we share experiences with each other. And I feel like I belong somewhere, which is a really wonderful feeling. So for me, I said this right at the very start of the podcast, that I don't know where I would be without it. I hate to think about where I would be without it.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people that will share that sentiment. It's a really lovely sentiment and a kind of testimony to the greatness of this hobby. So yes, we'd love to hear from you guys and your thoughts about how board gaming has affected your mental health. All right, so some quick announcements and news. The 4th Annual Board Game Barbecue Awards are here. Nominations are open to any member of the Board Game Barbecue community, whether you're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Discord. And there's going to be a link to the nomination form in the show notes. Anyone can nominate in any or all of the 6 categories. Those categories are Best Solo Game, Best Party Game, Best Light, Medium, and Heavy Game, Best Artwork, Best Expansion, and Game of the Year, the big one. Nominations will close at midnight on Sunday, May 26th, so a few weeks left still to get your nominations in for your favorite games of 2023. Once all nominations are closed, the top 5 nominated games in each category will be named the official nominees for the 4th Annual Board Game Barbecue Awards, and then our esteemed panel of judges, our beloved Patreons will vote on who they think should win each category. And winners will be announced at PlayCon in July. Get voting for your favorite games so they can be nominated and hopefully win. The 18th annual Board Game Geek Awards are up. We are nominated for the best podcast. The votes close on the 12th of May. There are 11 other podcasts in this category. We would love your vote if you feel that we deserve it. And if you need Geek Gold to vote, please reach out to our community and we can help you out there. If you want to support this podcast, you can always go to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue. Donate to get access to exclusive podcast episodes that we record just for our Patreons. But there are plenty of other ways to support the podcast without donating. The easiest ways is just to tell your mates, share the word. We love when, you know, we can get new people into the community, and that's the best way as well that we can continue to grow this community. You can also go to Apple Podcasts, leave a star rating and a review for us, or on Spotify's new star rating system. It only takes a few seconds of your time, but it means the world to us. Also, on the note of mental health, get involved in the Board Game Barbecue community. Join our Facebook community, follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, on Instagram, YouTube, Discord. There's heaps of ways to engage with fellow gamers. There's always conversations and good chats going on. So get involved and support the show. All the links are in the show notes.
And an extra special way to help and support the podcast, of course, is to vote for us in the Board Game Golden Geek Awards. So there's that time still available now to do so.
Absolutely. All right, now on to swear an oath. So, Jules, how did you go with your last oath?
I had 100% success. So, my oath that Def kindly conjured up for me was to play Arx on TTS, and I did do that. That has been played, and that is a big tick. I am not ready to share thoughts on it yet, but I'm very excited to see it come in person. I really want to play it in person, but playing the game on TTS was good, so that is done. For a new oath, the folks at Ivy Studio were kind enough to send some games for review, including a copy of Fractured Sky, which is on crowdfunding at the moment. This is a reprint of a game they launched a couple of years ago, and they have a new expansion for it. I didn't back it at the time, and I have been a big fan of Ivy Studios. I really quite enjoyed Moonrakers. It's a somewhat divisive game for a lot of people, but I quite enjoyed it with the right group. And then they've done Veiled Fate, which I absolutely love, one of my favorite games. And Fractured Sky didn't quite grab me at the time, but I do want to give it a go. I'm not going to judge a board game by its cover or its box, and I'm going to give it a go and play it. And I mean, another thank you to them for sending it. They sent the super deluxe version, which is all the magnetic pieces. They're all pre-painted minis as well. So it's the all-out experience. So I hope to get that to the table before I'm on the podcast next.
All right, Dana, how did you go with your oath? We were both on the podcast very recently, so
it's not,
you can
easy
be forgiven.
At that time, is it? Yeah. Well, actually, I did get it played. So Ben Todd was... a Patreon was kind enough to teach me one of his top 10 games.
Good on you, Ben.
It was fantastic. The Red Dragon Inn. Actually, when he brought it out to play it, I thought it was a completely different game to what I was going to be playing. It's like the perfect drinking game.
Yeah, it's a very silly game.
It's a silly game. It's all about like partying, partying in the Red Dragon Inn after all the fighting's done, and you're actually drinking. So you're basically, when you get drunk, you're out if you get drunk. And it's the perfect type of game that if you take a drink, you should actually be having a drink. And you're playing cards that make other people drink, and you can also, there's a bit of gambling, you can do a little bit of gambling, and it's just really good fun, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm so glad that I got to play it. So my oath I'm coming up with this on the fly because I forgot to, I actually forgot to get, come up with something. So I'm just coming up with it on the fly. I think I'm going to try and play Merchant's Cove.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
So Merchant's Cove has been on my shelf. It's got to be 2 years. It's got to be 2 years. And I've got to play this game, man. It's not even out of shrink. It's still in shrink. And I've got, how stupid is this? You can tell me if I'm stupid. I've actually got like the expansion coming from Kickstarter. I haven't even played the base game yet. It's so.
It's all right. Anyway. You've got time to rectify this, Dana. Just get Connor onto it. He loves that game.
So anyway, I am breaking it out and I'm going to play it. Merchant's Cove.
Good stuff.
My previous oath was to play Ginkopolis, and I did manage to get that done, but I will be reserving my thoughts about that game because it is 100% going to be a sizzle. It was great.
I really want to play it.
Really, really unique, and often gets told that it's a difficult to teach game just because you don't really have classical board game heuristics to rely on in terms of learning the rules. But it's really interesting. So, Ginkopolis, tick. My new oath is to play the expansion for Fields of Arl, which has arrived. I got that one from Dean.
Cool.
Got that in. So I'm going to give, I think it's Tea and Trade. So I'm going to give that a try. So it's my new oath is to play the Fields of Arl expansion.
Awesome.
Sounds great.
And that's it. That's all she wrote. Thank you so much, guys, for joining in on what is a very interesting chat. And thank you to our community, to our Patreons for supporting us. And yeah, get out there and play some more games.
That was such an interesting chat, Lauren. I really appreciate it. And you too, Jules.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
Oh, I love you too.
Such a good note to end the pod on. Just hold hands and share our love.
Kumbaya.
thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.